left off in Bacchus on the bottom of Vav Amud Beis. And the Gemara here is now going to cite four statements of Rabbi Chama, in which he paskin, and Lamaskana, it appears we're going to paskin like all of them. And these are all, three of the four cases are cases where someone is really asserting their Ikar HaDin rights, and I'm not sure that we would say that Rabbi Chama thought it was a good idea, but he simply was engaged in what we might say, Yikov HaDin Esahar. Sometimes you lodge a claim in the context of Dinei Mamonos, in which you're technically entitled, even if it's not the right or the generous thing to do. So we do recognize the difference between Din and Lefnei Mishuras HaDin, and as we will talk about later in the semester, sometimes Lefnei Mishuras HaDin, you actually don't have a choice on, as strange as that sounds. Sometimes in Lefnei Mishuras HaDin, it's called Midas Sodom, and we are kofen on Midas Sodom in a certain number of circumstances. With regard to Lefnei Mishuras HaDin, generally there's a machlokas in Choshen Mishpat, in Simen Yud Beis. The Beis Yosef, I think, quotes Mordechai that he doesn't like, who says that we're kofen on Lefnei Mishuras HaDin, which obviously raises some serious questions. How can it be Lefnei Mishuras HaDin if kofen? If you can force someone, by definition, that should be din. But you can take a look there if you're interested. It seems to be a machlokas. It doesn't mean in all circumstances, but it might be that if one of them is wealthy and one of them is not, that we would be kofer the usher and lefnei mishuras hadin. We wouldn't distort what the din is. We would make it clear what the din is, but nonetheless, we would say that kofer and lefnei mishuras hadin according to one sheet. So the Gemara begins as follows. Two lines from the bottom of Vav Amud Beis. Hanu Beitrei Dehavu Daire. There were two people who lived in a house. Char Havadayar Ila'i V'char Havadayar Tatoi. One of them lived on the top story, the second story, the upper story, and one of them lived on the bottom story. Itvas Tatoi. Apparently the floor of the upper story sank down. And now the upper guy had no problems. He had no problems because he had plenty of room. He maybe even had a shorter walk up or shorter climb up to his floor. But the guy on the bottom had a little problem because the roof had kind of descended. So, Amar Le Tatoi Le Iloi, the bottom guy said to the top guy, Tov Nivniye, let's rebuild this thing because it's not working for me. Amar Le Anashat Nekud De'ina. The guy on top said, I have no problem. He said, no problem. I can live here perfectly well. So, Amar Le Ivniye Anah. All right, I'll take care of it. Meaning, I will rebuild the whole thing. Meaning, move out. I'll take care of everything. Amar Lesley Duchta Lamederba. He says that I'm not going to have any place to live while the construction is going on. Amar Le Ana Ogar Lach Duchta. All right, I'll rent you a place. Amar Le La Matzinan De Itrach. It's too much of a tercha for me to move. So Amar Le, the guy says, La Kamisterli. It doesn't work for me to live like this. I can't. The floor is like, you know, 3.5 feet off the ground. It's kind of hard to live in a space like that. So he responds to him. The riff actually has a gear, so he says, why don't you carve out in the ground a little bit? And then shofa kresach va'ol, the shofa kresach upuk. Then, you know, you want to get into your house, so the house is a low roof, so, you know, crawl. That's your problem. Amar Rabbi Chama. Amar Rabbi Chama. Rabbi Chama gives the first psak. Rabbi Chama, by the way, like Shmuel, was from Nahardoa. Rabbi Chama says, Bedina Kama Akev, that the upper guy is, technically speaking, justified. Minadin. But, Vahani Mili, Dilo Matuk Shure Lamata Me'asara. Vahani Matuk Shure Lamata Me'asara. It's only true if the beams that they sank down of the upper story didn't descend below 10 tvachim. Meaning, what's 10 tvachim? Let's say 36 inches. But if they descended below, so basically he can say that below 10 tvachim, which is now the karka, not above the karka, is not meshubet to you. And when you're living below 10 tvachim, because the floor has sunk, guess what? You're in my territory, you're not allowed to be there. Therefore you have to join in rebuilding it and fixing this, so you will then be above and I will be below. The Hani Nili, says the Gemara, that the upper guy can say, everything's good for me, is the lo asnu ha gabe hadadi. Aval asnu gabe hadadi sasre ubanu. if they made it Tanai in the first place, that this is how it would be, that this would be, these would be the expected living conditions of both parties. So then, obviously, that's, I'm not sure why the Gemara feels the need to say it, except for perhaps for the next line, for the next question. Obviously, the Tanai is binding, and the upper guy has to help the lower guy rebuild. The Gemara says, "V'chi asnu b'hadi adabi ad kama ad kama." If they agreed that the bottom line has to be livable, and now the house kind of depresses, the upper floor depresses, so how much do you have to rebuild it to? And you could just rebuild it to a minimum amount. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rabban and Kamei the Rava Mishmei de Barzot Rav Rei de Nachman the Amar Mishmei de Nachman." Points to the Mishnah later in the Masechta where they talk about what were kind of default building sizes when you didn't specify explicitly what's the expectation when you're supposed to, when you're contracted, you're a contractor and you asked and you agree to build a house, how big does the house have to be? Now today obviously that you would imagine that wouldn't happen, because today when you have a contractor to build a house, they, you know, they spell out almost what we call Berachel Bitcha HaKetana. You know that expression? Melitza that's used when you want to say in full detail. So we say, he told me, Baruch HaBitcha Ketana, because you know the Medrash, when Yaakov made the deal with Lavan. So he didn't just say Rachel, because he was afraid Lavan would bring Rachel from the Shuk. Then he said, Bitcha. So then Lavan would rename Leah Rachel and Rachel Leah, and he'd give him Leah. So Bitcha Ketana. So anyway, that's what it means. You say, you spell out Baruch HaBitcha Ketana. In fine detail, everything that was supposed to be there. So, but it is a case where they don't spell it out. So what is the size? So he suggested it follows the particular model of the Mishnah later, that the height is supposed to be half the sum of the length and the width, which in many contexts would be pretty tall. So Amar Lehu Rabba said to them, Lava mina lachu lo tisle be buki sriki be Rav Nachman. Don't hang empty nonsense on Rav Nachman. Don't attribute nonsense to Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman said no such thing. Hachi Amar Rav Nachman, Kididairi Inshi. No, it means the amount that a person needs to live civilly, which, of course, as you might imagine, as an answer, is virtually totally useless. Okay, we understood that in the first place, and I made it tonight. We're asking that question. So the Gemara says, V'kama Amar Hunibreid Rabbi Yeshua, Kihechi Da'aili Isuraisa de Machosa Vahadar. Apparently, it's some type of a load. Rashi says very long, call them bamboo poles. You have bundles of them, and you have to be able to kind of turn around. Now, what's strange about this is that the shear that's really under discussion, I presume, is not a shear of length and width of the house. The shear that's under discussion is a height. I know how long and wide the house is going to be. I know what it was before A. And B, you're not going to build it smaller than the upper one. You could have it slightly indented. You could have the upper story cantilevered slightly over the edges. But bottom line is, you kind of know what the lower house is going to be. So my assumption is that this is a shear that when you're carrying a bundle, you know, it's hard to kind of, you know, crouch down when you're carrying the bundle. So even though the description is one which is really more of a length-width description, you know, if I can turn in both directions carrying these long sticks of wood, I assume that has an impact upon the height as well. Okay. Anyway, so that's the first in of that Rav Chama paskened on. Next story. Hahu Gavra... Dahava bane ashita achore kave dechavre. The word kava, we didn't get to do this in Targum this week because I barely got to do any of the psukim I had prepared in Targum. But what is the word kave? Kavav yud. It's a window. There are two words you'll find in Aramaic translation of a window, typically, at least in our Targum. It's not a common word. There are actually two words for window in Chumash, at least. One of them is chalon, and the other one is?
Aruba.
An aruba. What's the difference between a chalon and an aruba? If you do Rashi on the daf, if you're doing daf this week, it's a shame I didn't get to this in Targum, because it was like yesterday's daf yomi. Rashi writes an aruba, by its definition, is in the ceiling, as opposed to a chalon, which is in the wall. So you would call it a skylight gate. So you'll find the Targum, there are only a few occurrences. The two Aruba only appears in the Torah in this week's Parshat Vayis, and Chalon is pretty rare in the Torah. I know once in Parshat Toldos, I don't remember if it's anywhere else, and Unklus is not consistent, but the two words are Kave and Charaka. Charaka you might recognize if you know Shir HaShirim, which is
what's the first one? I can't remember the beginning of the pasuk. Menachalonos meitzitz menacharakim. So charakim appears there in biblical Hebrew, but it's an probably more common as an Aramaic word. Sif kave and charaka. So anyway, he built an ashita achore kave de chavre. He built a wall, you know, behind his friend's house, but blocking the windows. Amar le kama af l'salai. You're making it atha, you're making it dark. You're not allowed to build there. And the assumption, based upon what Rashi writes later, is he had this house here for 3 years. He had a chazak of ora from the window. In other words, he had a right to have light in the windows. So the other, so he says, Amar le, the guy who wants to, was building the wall, says, Sacharna lachacha, vavidna lach kave le'elme ashitai. Let me seal up your windows here, and I'll build you windows higher in the wall so that you'll get light above, in other words, higher than where my wall will be, so my wall won't block you. So, Amar le, kamaras le, la'ashisai. This is, you're going to undermine the wall by doing that. And the word mara'as is ra'ua, right? Ra'ua, ra'tzutz in Hebrew, means you're going to weaken the wall. Because Rashi says that all the banging when you're knocking in new holes in the wall is going to cause damage to it. So Amar le, Satarna lach lashisach aduchta de kave, ubanina la, vavidna lach kave bibinyana la mashitai. So you know what? I'll take the whole wall down, and then I'll build the wall from the floor up. I'll build the wall from the floor up, and basically it'll be I'm going to not take it down all the way to the window level where your window was. I'll then make it solid rather than punching something new above. And as I build it, I'll put in the empty spaces for the new windows. So Amar le, he says to him, Ashita mitata atika umila el chadita, a wall that the lower part is old and the upper part is new, lo kaima, it's not stable. Rashi says the mud is hard to get it to bind. So Amar le, he says, fine. So Sarna lach ala ara, I'll take the entire wall down. I'll remove the entire fourth wall of your house, the ones with the windows in it, the one I'm facing. And then I'll build you a new one. Uvanina la, vavidna la kave begava, I'll make windows in it, and you'll be happy. Amar le, he says to him, chada ashita chadata, v'chule besa atika lo kaima. He says that doesn't work either because one new wall and three old walls doesn't hold together so well. Okay. So finally says, Amar le sasana lach lekula besa ubunina lach kave vivinyana. I'll take the whole house apart and I'll rebuild it from scratch for you and I'll put the windows where they work. Amar le les le duchta lemeherba. I've got no place to live when you do that. Apparently, when you take the whole fourth wall down, that's okay. I guess you can keep the roof over your head. You can put a tarp to cover the empty fourth wall. I have to tell you, by the way, in this story, there's a... brief hakdama here about Agada, which we've spoken a little bit, but I think it needs to be emphasized. This is not Agada, this is Halacha, but stories. Chazal tells stories for a reason. Sometimes the reason is about halacha, but you need to read the stories very carefully. And I assume, as a human being, when you read the story, what is your reaction? What is your reaction in terms of the Baal HaBayis with the windows that have been blocked? Yeah, I have a three-word response. What a jerk. Okay, I understand. I get it. You want the light. Right? And the last line in the Gemara is going to be, so he doesn't want to go out. So Amar Lil Tarachna, it's too much of a tircha. So Amar B'chama, but then Kamakiv, he's entitled to say, no, you can't do that. Then the Gemara asks, Hainu Hach, V'hatu Lamali. It's the same as what's the point here, the previous story? I understand you're not entitled to impinge upon the usage of my house, and you're not allowed to rebuild my house or do construction if I don't want you to, even if you're paying for everything, even if you're giving me something better. So the Gemara says, the Lamishtamish Afagav Kamashmalan, Afagav Lamishtamish Elativne Vitziv Alma. The way Rashi understands it, our Girsa, it's a storage house. The next step in the Gemara, by the way, of course, is, well, why doesn't he just offer to have somebody carry the wood and the straw? to some other building, temporarily store it while they're building the house. Now, I am, of course, struck a little bit by something else here. I don't know what the Gemara's intent, it's kind of, again, it's hard to know about the specific circumstances, but what can you tell me about the guy who built the wall, who wants to build the wall, and he's blocking the guy's windows? What can you say about him? What can you say about his financial standing? He's very wealthy. This has echoes. In other words, he wants his wall this way. He will. You think about how much money he's throwing at it just to get this wall. Just to get this wall. Right? It reminds me, in other words, sometimes you encounter a problem in this world when you're doing construction, build a house. And for most of us, the answer is, well, we make do because we can't get around that problem because our supply of money isn't unlimited. But this guy feels like he has almost an unlimited supply of money, unless his money runs out up to the point where we're renting a house he has enough money to, but he doesn't have enough money to pay, the moving guys to move the Tivin of Etzive. So it's kind of interesting that there's no, you might say that one of the things that emerges from Bahama's statement here, yes, I think the other guy maybe is being a jerk, but it's also there are some things in halacha that money just can't buy. So that was the second story. There's an interesting comment to Tosos, which is a very strange comment at first. The Gemara wanted to know what was the chiddush in the second story. What was the chiddush? So Tosos says, I'll tell you what the chiddush is. The chiddush is that a house where some of the walls are new and some of the walls are old doesn't hang together so well. So that's the chiddush. So Tosos Teretz is, that's not such a chiddush because it's kind of obvious. We knew that. But Tosos' question is a little surprising. That's the chiddush of the Braisa? That would have been a chiddush of Chama's story? Is a construction lesson? So I think that what underlies Tosos, and we actually saw this a little bit earlier in the discussion of the Gemara about how thick walls are and how they stand. Metzias matters in halacha. It matters a lot. There are some people, when we study Yeridea, I never taught it, but I was a Talmud, so I learned Hilchos Shechita. Learning Hilchos Shechita meant I learned the Gemara in Chulin and the Tosafim and Tur and Beis Yosef and Mechaber Amash Achpaz, maybe some Pischei Tshuvas, and my Yoredei Rebbe gave Chaburas on the Rav's Torah, Brisker Torah on Hilchos Shechita. If you showed me an animal and gave me a knife, I wouldn't know what to do. In fact, there are so many things there that in the Beis Medrash, some people, when they learn things like that. What's a cow? A cow's a chefta. That's all. The idea of understanding the Metzias just seems to be secondary. A number of people mentioned this in the Levaya at the Spade of Rabbi Tendler, that he was very, very mocked on the knowledge of Metzias. It is very important. So the Gemara, Tosos thought it would be sufficient for the Gemara to have another story to tell us a building principle that you need to know, which is not just because it's not a construction manual, Gemara, but because in making decisions in terms of what's reasonable, what's unreasonable, we need to be aware of certain facts. And certain facts are that when you build a building, that being built at different times means it may not be as stable. And that's relevant. That's relevant to one party being able to say, you know what, this is not just me, dust the dome, that I'm saying no to you. I have a reason saying no to you because I don't want you to build just one wall in my house because I'm going to wind up with a house that's not as stable as it might be otherwise. Okay. Story number 3. Hanu beit re'achi depalgi b'hadei hadadi. There were two brothers who divided up the estate. I assume it was the estate. It wasn't a regular partnership. If it were a regular partnership, it would have just said these two shutfin. But it's two achi, so they divided up in the estate. You should be aware, I'm not going to talk about any of the pratim now, but one of the challenges in halacha is trying to understand or define or create the possibility of what we might call corporate ownership. Bederech klal, corporate ownership as understood in the United States, and I assume most Western countries, I'm not sure actually exists in halacha. If it does, the only place it might exist, and I'm not even sure that that's true, is hekdesh. But in generally speaking, when you have shutfim in halacha, that's a partnership. It's not corporate. There is no such thing. you know, the Supreme Court might have decided that corporations are people too, but the halacha doesn't really have this challenge because there's no such thing as a corporation. Or better said, corporations are just the sum of their people. They're not a separate entity. So even when you talk about municipal property, when you talk about things that belong to B'nai Ha'ir, in many ways it is viewed as the property of all the individuals together. It's not this amorphous corporate ownership. This has relevance in certain areas in Choshen Mishpat. One of the places that you do... Yes?
What about the concept of like a medina owning something?
So I assume that's not different than B'nai Ha'ir. It's just writ large.
So there is no such concept as a
No, I don't want to say that. I don't want to say that. There is... You might have. It's complicated. You might have beyond the ear. It's possible you have. If you actually, Dafyomi is doing this now, the question of tchum on certain kind of boros. But it's not clear that that's actually even corporate ownership. That might be hefker, and that might be something different. But I'm not sure. But the pashtus would be that just because it's a country, it's just a city on a larger scale. In terms of if you had things that could truly be said to belong, but it would belong to all B'nai Hamedina the same way, I think.
The structure of the JNF owning 8% of the land in B'nai Hamedina would not
apply. Probably doesn't. You know, I don't know much about what that structure is, but I don't think that means anything. In other words, it would have to be members. If there were people who owned the JNF, which there aren't really, so yes, I don't know that idea really. It's not, I don't want to say that halacha is opposed to it as much as it's not clear always that the structures exist within halacha. And obviously the question of corporate ownership has huge ramifications for all sorts of areas, like ribbis and things of that nature. You know, are you taking ribbis from a Jew, or is this really a new model? The one place that you do have, again, it's not, I wouldn't call it corporate ownership, but it is something different than a shutfus with nafgaminas halacha, is when brothers inherit an estate, or when yorshim inherit an estate from a morish, from a bequeather. So until the estate is divided up, there's something called the tfisas habayis, which is the estate is still sort of one entity, and that has an impact in certain with respect to certain dinim, and that changes when the brothers divide it up. And even if the brothers then rejoin, like regular shutfim, it wouldn't be the same as it was before. So here, anyway, I'm going to assume your two brothers inherit the estate. One takes the espalida, and chad mate espalida, chad mate tarbita. One of them got the espalida, which is a very fancy hall, very fancy room with a lot of light coming in from the outside. And one of them got the garden right outside. The one who inherited the garden went and he started to build a wall on the in front of the Ispalida, in his garden. Amar Le, the other guy said to him, Kama al, you're darkening my Ispalida. It used to be this beautiful, I think we would call it an atrium, would be the word. I had this beautiful atrium, and now you're blocking light. So Amalei, the garden guy, said, "Bididi kabanina, I'm building in my garden, that's your problem." Now, you might immediately ask the question, how is this different than my building a wall opposite your windows, which the Gemara says you can't do. So Rashi was careful about this. He says, Rashi assumes there, he says here, you never got a cheska shalashanim on that light. We divided up the chatzah, the ispalid and the tabitza. It's not like you had the Ispalita here to 3 years and could say, you know, you gave me that right, you know, or I purchased that right, or it was agreed upon that that you would not build a wall, I would enjoy the light in here from the, and I don't have the proof of it because 3 years have passed. So Rashi says here, by the Ispalita Tabitza, no time passed at all. The implication is that by the case of the Halonos, it's because there was a Cheska Shaloshanim on the Ora. But here there's no Cheska Shaloshanim, and therefore, you have your tabitza, I have my espalida, you can build the wall that you want. Okay, so then the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chama, Bedin Ka Amar Le. Rav Chama said that the guy, the tabitza guy, is justified, but he says, Bedin Ka Banina. Why? Because it is his. Amar Le Ravina Le Ravashi.
Tanya, Shnei Achim Shechoku, Achim Nehemat Al Sat Stei Karen, Achim Nehemat Al Stei Lavan. If two brothers, one takes a vineyard next to a wheat field or a grain field, one takes the grain field, the guy who got the vineyard, he gets 4 amos into the grain field, which he can leave blank because you need to have this akarim. So you see that when we split things next to one another, each one of us, in effect, gets the rights in the other one for the necessary functioning of our part. So when I got the vineyard part, so even though you got to stay love on that next to it, 4 amos I'm entitled to because of my karen. I don't even know if I don't know how much, when you say yeshlo labala karen dalarab stay love on, does that mean that I actually own that land, or just means you're not allowed to use it? So I have blank space between my karen and the grain that you, between my grapes and any grain that you grow. But bottom line is that we don't just say we divide it and what's yours is yours and what's mine is mine. There's an assumption that when there's a relationship that exists still between the two things, so that relationship exists. So Amar Leh, he says, no, that's not a raya. Hasam d'olu lahadade. Olu here is the word iluya, ilui, which means an umdana. Rashi explains that when they divide up the kerem and the stay lavan, so part of the cheshbon and part of the monetary cheshbon was how much is each worth, and my kerem, when we calculate the value, it's with the 4 amos into the stay 11. So that's why I'm entitled to 4 amos, because that was part of the cheshbon. Whereas here, they didn't do that. The word alu, the word iluye, is a word that you're not going to find easily, but it's entirely unklish. The word erkecha is translated as porsan, porsane. But in the Targum Yonasan and Targum Neofiti of Eretz Yisrael, it's the word for erkecha, which is an evaluation, is iluya. That's the word. So that's the same word here. Now, olu lahadadi. In other words, they cheshbon it out. Aval hacha, so then the Gemara says, aval hacha mai, by the ispalida and the tarbitza, the lo olu lahadadi, the chi b'shuftani eskinen, are we dealing with idiots here? The haishakal ispalida, the haishakal tarbitza, velo olu lahadadi? Look, when I take the garden and you take the atrium, you know that the atrium is probably more valuable. It's got all... I have walls around the garden at most. You've got this whole building. So presumably we made a cheshbon. We did a calculation. So if we're calculating, then we divide things up so that we would each, you know, it would be a fair division. So the assumption right now, the Gemara is about to reject it, is that part of using the ispalida is that you have all this light. So the Gemara says, Amar lei nehi, the alula dadi, deme livne kishure vahudre. The cost of the building materials, in other words, the actual... A building that was in each one, the levanim, the bricks, the kshure, the beams, and the hudre, I don't know what the hudre are, but some other part, that they offset. But the me'avira lo olu ladadi, they didn't calculate that the physical things, they got valuation, but they didn't talk about the avira part. What exactly was the taina here as a machlokas? What was happening with this tarbitza and the wall is a machlokas? The way Tosus understands Rashi, the tarbitza was actually darkening completely the ispalida. And Rabbeinu Tam doesn't like that because he assumes that that were the case. Of course the guy had a taina. So he says instead that it was blocking his view where he could see his field. In other words, here's my ispalida, here's your garden, but because there's no wall there, I can see all the way out into my fields. And now you're blocking my view, so I can't see them. And the other Rishonim don't agree because they think that that's not something... In other words... Of course, what is the, there's no comparison to avodas to the karen there. You know, if the issue is my sight lines, that's not something in the ispalida itself that I could have a taina. It's not like my using the ispalida, you're blocking the light, so I can't see there. And it's not something in the guf of the ispalida. So what's the hava mean of the Gemara to think that that's even doma to stay alav and stay a karen? So the re settles on the fact that it made things a little bit darker. There was more light coming in from the other side. So it wasn't that it was unusable, but rather it was just that it wasn't as nice as it was before. So for that, the Gemara says that they never cheshboned in, and therefore Rav Chama says that the guy who builds the wall is entitled to do so. Yes, Ben.
Isn't that a post facto reappraisal, though? Meaning at the time when they inherited the garden and the atrium, it was equal. Now you're telling me that we can never do anything
Well, the Gemara ultimately says that you can. That was Rabbi Chama's psak.
Right, but if that's the comparison, is it
kind of... So, look, we also agree, the Reed does say that if you render my thing unusable, right, it was totally dark,
well, then really what you, I didn't get in this Belida. Right? You have done something to my thing, which, to change it. So yes, you're working in your Rishus, but it actually is changing my object. Right? The Chiddush, the real Chiddush is of Rabbi Chama, is that even though you have less light, because it can still function, it's not like you make my room unusable. So that we never cheshbon then. Right? In other words, you got a room that was usable, you didn't get an ispalita for life. So the Gemara says, the lema lemi kara ispalita palgisle hashta mishavisle in derona. So now the Gemara takes a different approach and says, one second, that forget the specific thing of whether you're interfering enough with my property that it's considered an interference. But when we divided up, the deal was you would get a tarbitza and I would get an ispalida. And now I'm not getting an ispalida, I'm getting an inderona. What's an inderona? It's some type of a Greek word. It's actually found in unklus. Rashi, I think, says a cheder otel, a dark room. If the word is found in unklus, is the translation by Yosef. Achadra, to the cheder, it's a private place. So that's the translation into unklus is inderona. So apparently, there's a taina beyond the fact that the question of my airspace, you've changed the nature of what I've received. It's not that I can use my room, but not quite so well. It's that the deal was, you get a tarbitza, I get the ispalida. But the problem is I don't have an ispalida. So the Gemara says, Amar Shimi Barashi Shma Ba'alma Palagle. It's just basically a... I have a big house. Let's say I don't have a big house. It's all relative compared to what I guess. So all of us have big houses and small houses. But let's say I have a big house. So I might call it my mansion. Now, is my house a mansion? You've been there. My house is not a mansion. But I might call it my mansion. And if I say to you, Yoni, I'll sell you my mansion, and this is agreed upon price. And then you agree, and then you come and you say, this is not a mansion. Yeah, but I always call it my mansion. That's how we refer to it. Rabbi Weider's mansion. So is it a mansion? No, it's not, but it has that shame. So Rabbi Shimon Rashi says, it was a shame be alma. Milo Tanya, ha omer beis kor ofar ani mochalach, afo pisha eno lesech el higio. Shalomochalo el ashma. Who the mystery beis kor? And as if I have a field that people refer to, I refer to as a beis kor. And people know that. And Tosa says, the buyer also knows that. I'll sell you a base core. And some of my fields, you might actually have a core. Core is a shear of zera. It's a size, basically. But I call this a base core. You know, it's not a full base core. It's less than a base core. But that's what I call it. And you know I sometimes refer to that as a base core. You can't turn around and say to me, oh, but there's only a lesach. A lesach is a chatzi core. You didn't deliver what you promised. And some of you should ask, as Tosis does, well, why don't you just look at the ticket, the price? That should tell you. So Tosis gives you a number of answers as to explain why the price doesn't indicate anything here. Why the price doesn't give away, actually. You know, if I paid you, presumably a base core which doesn't have a core in it is worth less than a base core that really does have a core in it. So if a base core normally goes for $100 and a base less that normally goes for $50, and I sold you a base core and I delivered a thing that only, it's called a base core, but it's a less that. If you paid me $100, it's obviously mekachos. It's clear what you were buying. So Tosis works out in a few answers there. But the bottom line is, assume you can deal with that problem. So the sale is winding. Who the miskri base card? It has to be something that's known with that tag. Pardes ani mocherlach. I'm selling you what's a pardes? What?
Orchard.
An orchard. Thank you. Thank you. An orchard. So kerem ani mocherlach. Or, I'm sorry, Afo Pishembo Rimonim, right? The assumption, I guess, at one point is Pardes was Rimonim. So even though there are no Rimonim in it, Higio Shalom, in other words, the sale, it has gotten him, he's acquired it, sale is final, Shalom Mochalo El Shema, but who demiscri Pardes, it has to be called Pardes. Finally, Kermani Mochaloch, Afo Pishembo Fanim, Higio Shalom Mochalo El Shema, who demiscri Karma. So you see that same thing, if you know, listen, and that's what the Re says. If it's literally a dark room, that's not called a espalita. But as long as it's the people who call it espalita, even after you reduce some of the light to it, because it still functions, Fine.
Is the sort of mathematically doing us another, like, is another way of utilizing the mechanics of Chazal? I thought it was just a different mechanic by which he zilkets the blind.
Again?
The mathematically doing it, is that still saying that he has a halakha on the light because that's what it is? Meaning, is it different than the halakha earlier?
The question you're asking, the question of the Gemara?
Yeah.
So I think that the premise of the question is that if you change my room, then it undoes the division in the first place. We agreed to divide Tarbitza against Ispalida. This is not Ispalida. You got the Tarbitza of our father's state, I got the Ispalida. But if you go and change something, then it turns out I didn't get an Ispalida. Yes, because you changed it later, but what that means is that when it says in the state division document, I get an Ispalida, that implies I get a room that's entitled to a certain kind of light. Yes. Okay, so the Gemara says, no, but midami, it's still not similar. I can say, we made a deal. You wanted a base car, I sold you a base car. You wanted a paradise, I sold you a paradise. But halcha matzi amele adaita dachi palgi da iraba kihechido darubah hasan. Here, you can say, listen, we divide up the estate. My assumption was, you were going to use part of the estate the way our father used it, and I'm going to use part of the estate that our father used it. That was understood in the division. That we get to, you know, our father had a sauna and our father had the steam room, right? You get the sauna, I get the steam room. You get the steam, I get the sauna. But it means I get to, our father, he had more, so he had his option. So you and I each get one option. But if you do something that cuts off the water to my steam room, so then that's not how we agreed to divide things up. So the Gemara says, Amrulay, they respond. Amrule mar Yanuka mar Kashisha Breder of Chista. Leravashi. He answered Nehardai Litamayu. Nehardai, which is a name for Abacham, it's also a name for Shmuel. Shmuel said that Nehil li Shvila Rakia Kishvila Denardoi. Shmuel was a Baki in astronomy. So he said that the paths of the heavens are as clear to me as the back alleys of Nehardai, because that's where he lived. So Rav Chama also was from Nehardai. So he said, Nehardai, Litamayu, the Amar Nachman, Amar Shmuel, La'achem Shechalku, Eimah, no Derech Zalze, Velo Chalono Zalze, Velo Sulamo Zalze, Velo Amar Samayim Zalze, Vizar Bohem, Shalachos Kevuose. And V'Rav Amar, Yesh Lahem. If we don't paskin like Rav, we would paskin like Shmuel. Bedinei. Now, a couple of arrows here. So, firstly, what does this mean? Now, how are these two positions consistent? So, Tosus explains, there's a machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim later in the Masechta, fourth of his parah, whether a mocher is mocher ba'ayin yafa ba'ayin ra. In other words, when I sell you something, I sell you let's say I sell you a house. I sell you my chatzar. But there's a bor in back of the chatzar that I need to access. I didn't sell you the bor, but I sold you the chatzar. Do I have to repurchase from you rights to walk through the chatzar? Because I sold you generously. I sold you the chatzar completely. Mocher ba'ayin yafa mocher. Or do you say no? That when I sell you, I sold you a chatzar. But I get away with giving you as little as I possibly can. Because mocher ba'ayin ra mocher. So Shmuel Paskin's like Rabbi Akiva. Mocher ba'ayin yafa mocher. And therefore, if two brothers divided something up, if I gave you the tarbitza and I kept the espalida, when I sold you, in effect, the tarbitza, my portion of tarbitza, I sold you generously, so much so that I basically mostly forwent any rights that I had in the tarbitza. And therefore, in this case, as long as the way we would say, as long as I haven't totally darkened your room to render it unusable, basically, when I sold you the rights to my rights in the tarbitza as an heir, I sold it to you really the ayin yafa. That's how Tosus explains the Gemara. Two comments just about the language here. Number one, the term Nehardai. Rashi here makes reference to a Gemara in Sanhedrin, I believe he does. Or Tosus does it for you. Rashi doesn't cite it, but that's what he's thinking about. There's a Gemara on the last Amud Beis in the first parak in Sanhedrin that you should be aware of. The Gemara there lists a whole series of names a few of Tanaim and a few of, and the rest of Amoraim throughout Shas, like when you see this term, Hayoshrim Lefnei Chachamim in the Mishnah, Hadan Lefnei Chachamim, it may only occur a couple of times, it refers to the following Tanaim. When it says Nehardoi, it refers to Reb Chaim or Shmuel. There's the Gemara, you should take a very quick look at the Gemara just to get a sense of what the Gemara does, because throughout Shas, Rishonim will make reference to it. It's just kind of a list of, it's kind of like an appendix, almost, to Shas. I'm not saying it's comprehensive of everything in Shas, but it's a whole bunch of things where the Gemara tells you, when you see this phrase, as opposed to a person being named, the actual Amar being named, but instead it uses an expression, you'll see a whole bunch of them there. So that's where Nardai is one of the examples. Tosfos points out, Nardai is mentioned in Sanhedrin. And Amorai, the Nardai, Rav Chama, and Shmuel. Rav Chama. Right? That's what the Gemara says there. Tosfos explains why Shmuel also is sometimes called Nardai. The other thing which I think was just very amusing in Tosfos, what is Mar Yanuka and Mar Kashisha mean? What is a Yanuka? A young child, a baby. What does Kashish mean? Old. Who was older, Mar Kashisha or Mar Yanuka? The answer to the question I'm asking, as Tosfos points out, is obviously Mar Yanuka. How is Mar Yanuka older than Mar Kashisha? The answer is, it's not a reference to them, but to what stage in their father's life they were born. Mar Yanuka was born when his father was young. Mar Kashisha was born when his father was old. Therefore, Mar Yanuka is older than Mar Kashisha. Okay. Anyway, you should be aware as adjectives in Aramaic, in the Babli, Yanik and Kashish. Yanik means younger and Kashish means older. Okay, but Mar Yanuka, Mar Kashisha, means the one of his father's young age, and right, a Ben Zakunim is young, not old. Right? Okay. I love that Tosis. I mean, I love all Tosis, but that one kind of struck me. Okay. Finally, one more din. Hahushtara diasme, the Nafakalea Pavra. The Yisomim had a certain shtar, meaning the money was owed to the Yisomim. And there emerged a tavra, a shovar. A shovar is a receipt. A receipt is given. If I lend and need some money with a shtar, and then I collect the loan, the normal thing is I give Nissim back the shtar, and Nissim takes the shtar and tears it up or tosses it in the fire. But an alternative, let's say for some reason I don't have the shtar, but Nissim says, look, I'm not paying you until I get the shtar back, is we could write a shovar. We could write a receipt, and it says that Nissim paid me back. I write, Nissim paid me back the loan that he owed me for such a date. He paid me back on this day, and I signed below where I get Aiden to whatever you get. Mike Safiad, Aiden, Nissim, here's your proof that you paid. Okay? And that works just fine. So you had here, though, a situation where the father had money owed to him, he died, and now the son wanted to collect with the shtar. And then the guy pulls out a shofar. Pulls out a shofar. So that should have been the end of the story. What do you do with the shtar that the Yisomim have? You tear it up. Because why would you allow him to keep the shtar? It's a recipe. He might lose the shofar, and then the Yisomim would go and collect shalok at them. So the Gemara says, Amar Chama, Agbuye lo megabin alei, umikra lo karin alei. We don't collect with it, nor do we tear the shtar. Agbuye lo megabin alei, denafa kavra la, because there's a shofar against it. However, mikra lo karina le dechigad le yasni duma maisu rai umari le. We don't tear it up because it's possible that this guy, and as you're going to see in a moment at the end of Maskan of the Gemara, if you didn't see already, is that the guy waited to pull out the shofar until the father was dead, because the father would have said, seriously? That thing's a forgery and I can prove it. But the Yisomim have no idea. So we want to at least give them the advantage of getting older, reaching godless, and maybe they can dig up rais when they're a little bit more with it. So we don't tear up the shtar. Normally, if I owed you money and I paid it back and I can prove I paid it back and you're still holding the star, Beis Din will force you to disgorge the star and they'll destroy it. Because it's only, there's a Gemara in Ksubas in the second parak, Al Tashken Balecha Avla. I don't think the Gemara says about a shtar parua, but it says about a shtar amana. Shtar amana is when I say I borrowed $100 from Elimelech and I didn't. And I give the shtar to Elimelech anyway, just because in case I want to borrow $100, he'll have it with him and he'll lend me the $100. Now, it's perfectly fine for me to have the shtar written that I owe Elimelech $100 and me to hold on to it. And when he gives me the money, when I need to borrow money, then I give it to him. But a shtar amana is a recipe for dishonesty. So I think it's in reference to that. I don't know if a shtar peru is in the Gemara Ksubas. I think it's not Daf Yud Chesamid days. Says Al Tashkein Va'alecha Avla. It's a pasuk I think in Eo, believe it or not. I'll tell you where the Gemara is. Nope. Yes, no. your test on the base. What do they say? Shtar mana and a shtar pasim. And some say shtar parua. Okay, so yes. So bottom line is basin will force you to disgorge the shtar. You know, if I can prove that you have it and I paid the money back. But so in this case, they don't force the Yisomim because the Yisomim don't have the wherewithal yet to make a full-fledged taina to respond. So the Gemara says, this, by the way, does has a striking parallel. I don't know if it's in Yesh Nochlin, but I don't know if the Kol has gotten to it, where one of the Amoraim said to his Talmidim, he said, after I die, if a Shtar Psach comes that I pass in a certain way, so don't tear it up and don't overrule my previous Psach if you think it's wrong, because maybe if I were alive, I would explain to you why I did that. But on the other hand, you shouldn't follow it subsequently because Ein Zayin L'Mash Ein Av Ro'os. So it's kind of in this limbo situation. So here we tell him, you know, we leave the shtar as is, but the guy will hold on to a shtova. Amar le Rav Acha Brei de Ravina, huch samai. So Rav Acha Brei de Rava asked Ravina, how do we paskin in Rabbi Chama's cases? Amar le b'chulu hachosak Rav Chama, the bar mitavra. Except for the last case, he says, we don't paskin Rav Chama. Desade b'shakare lo mechaskinen. We don't assume that Edom signed on the shtova are liars. So Marzutra Brei de Rav Mariam, Rav Hanami hachosak Rav Chama. We also pass him like in there. The Isa, the Tavra, Na'al Yehu, Iboy Le'lapuke B'chaye Avuham. If in fact it really were a legitimate Shova, he should have pulled it out when the father was alive. The fact that he waited to pull it out until the father died suggests that maybe the Shova is not legitimate. We're not going to ignore the Shova. We don't vaday say that the Shova is invalid and we'll let the Yisomim collect. But we do say we're not tearing up the Shtar either. In other words, there is a Shova that undermines the Shtar. But there are a Matthias that might undermine the shofar a little bit, and therefore migba lo migabinamba and mikra lo mikarinamba. So umidalo apke, the fact that he didn't take it out b'chayavuam, because and as the Rush quotes, I think, for the Rimigash, had the father been alive with the shtar, and this guy had the shofar, he should have gone to Beis and say, force him to tear up the shtar. I don't want to have to worry about the shofar forever. So umidalo apke shvamina is a yufeziafe. That shvamina doesn't mean vaday. It means it's certainly possible that the father, in fact, forged the material. Okay, we're going to continue. Josh? Just get my backpack from my office. Something that I need. Papers. Okay. Oh, wrong key. I won't catch it. You just bring the whole backpack. So. Okay, thank you. Don't need the computer. Okay, so the Gemara, the Mishnah continues. The Mishnah starts on Zayin Amadeus. Kofen Oso Livnos Beishar V'delas L'chotzer. The way Rashi explains, the assumption is you have a shomer for the chatzer. But the shomer doesn't like to stay in the sun all day. So they want to build a beishar, which is a little like a small building adjacent to the doorway of the chatzer. As you can see from the Gemara, you can either build the beishar outside the chatzer or inside the chatzer. So we force, if one of the members doesn't want to pay for a beishar for the shomer, which means it's going to be impossible to hire a shomer because no shomer wants to work under other circumstances, so we will force any recalcitrant member of the chatzer to contribute to the building of Beishar. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Lo kol chatzer is ruilis Beishar. Not every chatzer needs a Beishar. The purpose of Beishar with the Shomer is to create a certain level of privacy. And not all of them need it. Rabban will explain which one does, which one doesn't. Then, kofanoso livnos le'ir, chomod l'asayim uvriach. We force all the members of the city to contribute to the building of a wall, and a delasayim, and doors, and a bariach, and a bolt. Amar, Rav Shimon Leon Amar, lo kal hayaros ru'yos l'choma. He says, not all cities are ru'yos for a wall. Now, I have to smile. I read this carefully, and I was smiling. And I know I made a reference to it when Rav Nagin was here. But I will explain now, because this is actually pretty funny. I guess he said it also. According to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, not all cities are ruyos for choma, but what about for the Hasayim of Riach? Does that mean that all cities are entitled to, a doorway with a bolt and so on, but just not a wall? Now, the reference that I made in Shir, which is very funny, you can Google it, is to the toll booth scene in Blazing Saddles, where they set up literally a toll booth in the middle of nowhere, in the desert, where it's open on both sides of it, and the The bad guys who are chasing it come to the toll booth and they stop and figure they can't go through unless they get dimes for the thing. It's a pretty funny scene. This idea of having, there used to be also in TNAC, the TNAC members here won't remember it, they're probably too young. Zookier might remember it. There's this one house on Rugby Road. I would pass it walking on Shabbos both ways. And there's a little walkway in the back of the house, you know, from the side road, a little sidewalk. And at the sidewalk, there's a gate. But at a certain point, on both sides of the gate, it was just open grass. So it's like, but the gate stood there. So I was always struck by that. It's like, that's a, you know, somebody's very yekish, so then they would never enter except through the gate. And if the gate were locked, you couldn't get in. So anyway, so when Shimon Malil says, not all cities are ruyas for Homa, if you don't have a Homa, you don't need a Dolasayim of Riach either because it doesn't do you any good. He didn't need to state it explicitly. Okay, that's the most of the Dilichusa of the day. All right, so now, Kama Yeheba Irvi, Hey Kansheir, when do you establish citizenry in a city that you are now responsible for contributing to the city's needs? Right? If I stay in Motel 6 in the city one night, you're not going to tell me, they're going to show up at my door knocking, okay, please make your contribution to the Homa Dolasayim of Riach. That's obviously absurd. So when do you become a denizen? Which is a broader question, halacha generally, like when do you have to put up a mezuzah? Right? How long do you have to be there and so on? All sorts of things like this. So the Gemara now says, Lememra, the Beishar Mal Yusahi. A Beishar is something we force people to build? There was a chassid who used to have regular conversations with Eliyahu Navi. Eliyahu Navi was used to come to visit. They would talk chassidus, presumably. He was a chassid. Avad Beishar, one time, he made a Beishar in his chassid. The Tulo Mishtai Badei. Eliyahu no longer came. Now, why did Eliyahu stop coming? It wasn't because he couldn't get into the chatzar, but rather because it was an act of rishus. Because by building a beishar on the chatzar, it was no longer possible for the aniyim to come and beg. Now, I know some people like that idea, but that's actually not proper. And even though we would sometimes like to cover our eyes up from poverty, so that's not what Eliyahu Navi thinks we should be doing. You know, there's a story. I heard this from Shafter, but I think I asked him years ago. He didn't remember where it was from. He didn't remember the story, but I know I heard it from him. About in Vilna. In Vilna, they never used to bother the Gra unless they had a new issue that came up. They wouldn't bother him for mislearning. So the story goes that the Balabatim in Vilna wanted to make a takana that the Aniyim are not allowed to go around to the houses and beg. They have to go to a set. They go to the Gabbai Tzaka and he'll disperse funds. He'll do bidika, whatever dikas needs to be done, and disperse funds. So they decide we better ask the Gra. So they came in, they came to the Gra and said, we have a new question to come up. And they presented the question. He said, this is not a new takana, it existed before. Why are you bothering me? This takana existed in Sodom and Amorah. So the idea that we would sort of set up these barriers where the poor can't make their case to us, so that's Sodom and Amorah. So that's why Eliyahu stopped coming to visit his chassid, because he built a Beishar. So how can the Mishnah then say that a Beishar is something you can force other members, why you could force other members of the Chatzar to engage in rishos? I know that it's sometimes uncomfortable. I would just state for the record, and maybe I shouldn't state this, but I feel very strongly about this issue. I don't know what the laws are in New York City. As you know, I'm generally purely a law-bound person in halacha and other rules, as we can all see. But if someone approached me, a panhandling in the city, and I don't always have it, to have something available, Tana Katana, and let's assume for the moment that the person really is someone in need, I actually don't care what the laws say, I don't know if they still exist, laws that you can or can't give to panhandlers, because it doesn't matter in what society, laws of Sodom are not binding. Just because it's a law in the books doesn't mean that I would personally observe it. I would pay every penny of my taxes, I observe essentially every law, but a law that comes from Sodom and Amorah is not binding upon any human morally. And when a poor person approaches you, again, if you think the person is a con artist, you can choose, obviously, the Ramayim you don't want to give stuff to. But a person who's genuinely an ani in need, to be malim einav menatzaka is a big aveira. And therefore, at the very least, putting aside the specifics, and sometimes you don't have stuff with you, and so on and so forth, but the idea that we want to sanitize poverty and not have to see it with our eyes and not feel it, is clearly against Torah. Right? We have to feel the pain of aniyim. And you only feel the pain of aniyim when they come to you and they ask you and they say they're in need. If you can shunt them off to a central authority where you can pretend the poverty, you don't have to feel their poverty. So that's a tremendous chisaron, Gabe.
Does it make a difference between Jewish and non-Jewish?
We could. The answer to that question is no, because the issue with Midas Sodom here is not a technical halachic obligation. It's what kind of a human being are you? Sodom wasn't Jewish either, and yet apparently the Ribbono Shalom annihilated it. So, Mefarnes and Aniyakim and Darkei Shalom is an obligation, and Darkei Shalom may be more than just so that they don't kill us there. It's not Mimei Eva. But in terms of your character as a human being, I don't think it makes a difference whether the person who's in need in front of you is Jewish or not Jewish. What it says about your character and what it says about a society, I think, is the same regardless. We could debate whether it's whether or not this person is Ramayim, whether you're helping them or not. That's a separate dispute. But I think it's fair to say that there are a lot of people in New York City and elsewhere who are homeless and who are genuinely poor, really, really in a bad state. I don't know the person. And I hate to say this, but you know, for some of the people who may use it to buy drugs, their lives may be so. These are not people in a good place in life. It may be that that's actually a toba to them. I mean, obviously, it'd be better not to need drugs, not to be on drugs. But their lives are in a pretty miserable state. So I think that type of a svara. That type of asfara is I don't give them because they'll just use it to buy drugs and I walk away is something to assuage our own consciences. If we really care that much, we would at least try to help them. We wouldn't give them money. If we would sit down and we would talk to them, we'd see if we could get them help somewhere. I think that's just a way of my saying I don't want to be bothered by it. So we could debate whether or not the right thing to do is knowing that. But if that's the only question is do I walk by and not give them or do I walk by and give them? So that is an argument to me. It's something, you know, I might have once made in the past also, I think is more to assuage our own guilty consciences than truly a just response. Is there a question? Okay. So the Gemara here is going to be Mataris and explain why the Mishnah can say that you force a Beishar as opposed to the story with Eliyahu HaNavi and this chassid that he stopped visiting, that there are different kinds of Beisharas. And the upshot of every answer of the Gemara, there's a series of boys' names, is really just, does the Beis Shara prevent the Ani from getting to being able to call out and the Balabatim will hear him, or does it not? That's what it boils down to. So they're all details. The Gemara says, Lo Kasha, first it says, Hami Gavai, Hami Barai. It depends where you make the Beis Shara. So Tosus, I think, says that when it's Mi Barai, or as Rashi says, Mi Barai, the Ani can enter the Beis Shara. The Beis Shara might have a door. Let's start at the starting assumption of the Beis Shara doesn't have a door. So when the Beis Shara is on the outside, the bunny can go right up to the door of the chatzer, because that you do have, and when he calls through just the door of the chatzer, then the balabatim will hear him. Whereas if you put the Beis Shara on the inside, and he can only go up to the door of the chatzer, now you have a double barrier, and they're not going to know that anybody is there. And then the Gemara says, if there's a door to the Beis Shara, so he can't get into the Beis Shara, so once again you have a double barrier. Whereas if it doesn't have a delus, he can walk into the Beis Shara on the outside and he can call by the door of the chatzer. Ibar Yisema Havaha Dislei Delus. Now it could be they both have a door, but Lokasha Hada Islei Posachas Hada Lasle Posachas. It depends whether or not you can open the door. In other words, is it locked from the inside or not? And Ibar Yisema Havaha Dislei Posachas Velokasha Hada Posachas Dei Mikavoi Hada Posachas Dei Meabroi. It depends where the thing that you turn is. In other words, if the handle that you can turn to open it is only on the inside, then the Ani on the outside can't get into the Beis Shara. If it's got a knob on the outside where you can open it from that side as well, so then he can walk, he can let himself in, and then he can knock on the door. Okay, so that's how you resolve a Beis Shara that prevents a person from hearing the Aniyim, so that's problematic. A Beis Shara that doesn't prevent it, so that would be not only not problematic, but in certain cases would be mandatory, or at least the parties could, one member of the chatzer could force the others to do so. And very, very quickly, just the Gemara says, Kofan of Sunday is Peshavidas, the chatzer, Tanya, Rosh Hashanah, Omer, Lo, Kol Chatzer, Suri, is the Beishar, and the chatzer, Sumuchal, Rosh Hashanah, it has to be right next to the Rosh Hashanah. That's really the Beishar, Vishanah, Sumuchal, Rosh Hashanah, and really the Beishar. It makes sense. Rabbanan say, why does a chatzer that's not Sumuchal, Rosh Hashanah need a Beishar? The answer is Zimna the Dachiki Bnei Rosh Hashanah Ba'ayli Vasu. Sometimes when the big crowds, people then work their way into the chatzer. That's why you want to have a Beis Shara there. And then in a similar vein, Kofan Osiv Lovinus La'ir Chomad Lasayim Uvriach Rav Shimon Li Omer Lo Kali Reis Ruiz Lachoma Ela Ira Smucha Lesvar Ruiy Lachoma V'Sheinu Ruiy Lachoma. Depends whether it's near the You would say that if you're near in a dangerous area, if you're near the boundary, the border of the country, where you might have raiding bands from other countries that will just kind of slip in and slip out, so then you need these things. Otherwise, you don't. And Rabbanan Zimid Dimikri Ve'asu Gayasa. The Rabbanan say sometimes, actually, you have, Gayasa will come even into cities that are further in, and therefore the inhabitants of a city are entitled to force one another to build, if they want, to build, if nobody wants it, it's one thing, but to build appropriate fortifications to protect the residents of the city. Okay. Any questions before we end the Kiyas for now?